Hello and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. This is your co-host, Brian Kelly. Episode 66 of the podcast features lightly edited audio from a live Google Plus Hangout on Air, conducted September 23rd, 2013. In this installment, we talk about technologies libraries need to be aware of and using, the praise heaped upon Netflix by Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan following the show's Emmy win for Best Drama, and the value of internet radio stations focusing on local music. All that and more is just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Friday, September 27, 2013. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazni. Hello and welcome to another episode of Technology and the Arts. My name is Brian Kelly.
And I'm John Lemazni.
And together we'll be exploring the connections between technology and art. Before we get started tonight, I just want to thank many of our new followers on Twitter over the weekend. We had a little rush of new followers, so just thought it'd be a good opportunity for us to reintroduce ourselves. We used to do that all the time in our old podcast. So, John, why don't you just tell our new viewers and podcast listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Brian, and I appreciate the opportunity. I am John Lemazni. I'm currently a technology and design consultant in the general Princeton area. And I like working around all of New Jersey and in other states, but Princeton is home right now. And I like to help people to use technology to work and live better. I think that there's great opportunity for it. And because I have a fine arts background, this podcast in particular is always a joy to talk about various topics, even if they are not always very clearly about technology slash arts, that they are all sort of interrelated. That's one of the things I love about both technology and art is they're so wide ranging. So sometimes when Brian and I go off topic a little bit, there's still good reason for it. I think that there's art in a lot of things and technology in a lot of things. And, so this is a great platform to talk about all sorts of things and hopefully get people interested in talking about technology to accomplish things that they might even feel are impossible. You know, I think a slippery slope and a beautifully slippery slope to start to use things like WordPress and Android and all these other things that we talk about to get work done. How about you, Brian?
Well, I'm a communications professional working in public relations, public affairs, print, web, social media for about 15 years now, and also in the central New Jersey area, also a very amateur songwriter slash musician, but mostly doing public affairs, public relations work. So, and John and I started doing this in December 2006, was the first episode of the Technology and the Arts podcast. We did that for 2 years, till December 2008. And except for a few specials here and there, it was on a hiatus until last year when we brought it back as a Google Plus Hangout. And we decided to do it again this year, another 10 episode run, and and actually we're thinking now of possibly doing a spring season, but that's very early in the works, so but we'll see if we can bring this back in the spring. But now that that's out of the way, John, it's good to see you again. How you doing?
I'm doing very fine, Brian. How are you?
Doing good, thanks. What you been up to lately?
Well, as you noted in a post earlier on the Tech Arts Facebook page, I posted this morning and hope to post more frequently in this way, not just about technology topics in general, but about what's going on. Probably the most frequently asked question that is not about a specific technology issue is, when are you presenting next? And just tonight, I was at Princeton Public Library, as I am almost every week. Luckily, it's a fantastic place to present. and I was introducing people to WordPress, a favorite of yours and mine and many other people. And later this week, I will be talking at the Mary Jacobs Memorial Library in Rocky Hill to a group about using Android, getting started with Android, another one of my favorite topics and one that I talk about a lot. Consulting is ongoing. I have a couple really interesting design jobs going on right now. Have you ever met my friend Craig?
I don't think so.
Craig Smith, who I went to high school with, recently reached out to me to work on a logo project for an upcoming podcast. And I did a post about it on lemazni.com, sort of talking about the process of starting with font choice and color choice, and then some different arrangements based on his feedback, and then finally specific formats that he was looking for, such as a WordPress header, a Facebook header, a iTunes music store, iTunes app store, podcast square, and a really fun project. I really like those kinds of quick projects where I'm able to very quickly, you know, have a discussion with somebody, get to the heart of what their branding is, and play a bit. And his style is especially funky. You know, it's he's very much a child of the 70s like you and I. And he, you know, out of all the colors that I gave to him, he sort of chose these, like, cafeteria 70s style colors, which were colors I presented for that reason. I thought he might enjoy them. And we came up with a really fun project. So if you are interested in developing a logo for yourself, or you're interested in talking with me about how you might develop a logo, I think the post, which is right on the front page, is a pretty good way of getting a sense of how it might go, what it would be like. And hopefully it would be completely different for your project, and should be, honestly, because, you know, every project has its own look, feel, color, font, message. And finally, I wanted to reiterate here what I said on the Facebook page for Lemazni Consulting, that I am actively pursuing trade work. And in particular, I'm looking for outlets that are using banner ads and who are Princeton located, and people who need consulting but don't necessarily have the budget for it, but do have the ability to produce ads on their site and advertise to their followers, and especially if you have a good follower count. I'm really interested because word of mouth is maybe the most fantastic way, and word of mouth can take lots of forms, not necessarily just verbal. So,
John, if you wanted a banner ad on technologyintheArts.com, yeah, just ask.
Well, it's really funny you say that, because we don't have a followership that would command.
That's right. You said you wanted followers. Well,
yeah,
we're
eventually I will. We should have ads there, honestly. But so, for example, I sat down for the first time today with somebody who saw my mention of the idea, and we're going to start doing cross-promotion and also cross-advertising, and I'm going to offer them some consulting work, and they're going to offer me their audience for a bit in a really classy way. It's not going to be like an ad at all, but rather be more of a discussion of the kinds of things that I do and specific listings of advertisements. So, and that started today. It was beautiful, and I don't want to call anybody out because I don't want to talk out of turn about what the future might bring, but you might see me show up in some different venues than I have before. So that's a beautiful thing. How about you?
Well, I have a slight update on my musical activities. The Silver Horse cover, the Yoko Ono cover that I recorded with my friend Christian Beach, who's a singer-songwriter based in New Jersey. He is participating in this Yoko Ono tribute album that's being released by Main Man Records, and that should be coming soon. the official announcement seems to be very close at hand. They had a very cryptic Facebook post saying that they have an announcement coming up soon. So I assume it's about that. But the exciting thing, and this is, I kind of mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I think, and John knows about it, is that we have actually been invited to perform the cover of Yoko Ono's Silver Horse at a New Jersey Peace Action Concert for Peace taking place at Bloomfield College's Westminster Arts Center. And that's on October 19th. And there's going to be a Yoko Ono tribute during that program. And a few of the bands that contributed tracks to the Yoko Ono tribute album were asked to take part in that concert. Now, Yoko Ono has been invited, apparently, but they don't expect her to show up. She'll probably just send a video greeting. But, Yoko Ono did turn 80 years old this year, and that's the reason for the album. But it would be really cool if we could perform that in front of Yoko Ono. But still, it's an honor to be invited to perform at this event. It's going to be a really, really big deal. And Christian actually is, getting a new album. I'm not sure if it's going to be an EP or a full length. I think he had planned to do an EP in between his last album came out in 2009, I believe. Actually, the release party was the day I got engaged to Allison. So it's been a while, and he's had twins. You know, life happens, and I'm not sure if it's going to be a new album or a new EP, but he is trying to get a new product out there, and he's asked me to play on a couple of tracks. So this won't be a one and done deal. Hopefully, I'll appear on the album or EP, whatever it is, and also. Right now, we have it scheduled for Thursday since we keep on missing each other. We have a test hangout scheduled, so we can try to get Christian on one of our webcasts, one of our Technology and the Arts webcasts as a guest, and hopefully a little performance. So just going to see how everything works out, and if we can get everything worked right and it sounds good, I'll bring him back for one of our last three episodes that we have for this fall 2013 season. So,
do you think it will be pre-recorded and brought in, or do you think that he'll do it live?
I want to bring him in live, and I think he's up for that. So,
fantastic.
We'll see. I would really prefer it to be that way.
Me too. Congratulations,
actually, I was thinking that, I really don't want to do it, but I guess if he plays something I can play accordion on, I could always get the accordion on and play along with him, but that might be a little...
That's going to be tough because although we don't really notice it, there is a bit of a delay.
Yeah. But
And depending on his, it would be difficult.
Right. So...
It would be cool, though.
It would. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, this would be challenging, but it would be fun to try. But so that's what's going on.
Congratulations. That's great news.
It is, and I'm looking forward to that performance. So.
I'm talking about both of those things, but that's fantastic.
Right.
It's nice to be recognized, right?
Yes. It always is. So, John, what would you like to talk about in focus or in depth this week?
So this week, actually last week, I had an opportunity to do a day-long presentation for a library, which I don't think that I will mention, not because they're not lovely and not because they don't deserve it, but because they may not be appreciate being called out as a recipient of training. although, you know, I don't see why they wouldn't, but I wouldn't want to take the chance of offending anybody. But through an arrangement with LibraryLink New Jersey, the consortium that I'm pretty sure I've mentioned before, I was asked to go for a staff training day and talk about the most important technologies that I find useful for libraries to be aware of so that they can share with their patrons, share with staff, and help to foster a discussion about what they should be aware of in the next, you know, 2 to 3 to 5 years from a services standpoint, which is a fantastic opportunity and really open-ended. And what was lovely about it was, as always, I go with a presentation in mind. You know, I go with a presentation that I can follow. But I always start by saying, you know, let's set this aside and just talk about what it is that you want to talk about. Like, let's have a discussion about things that maybe you've heard about but don't know very much about, or questions that you have. And it requires a little bit of bravery on their part because they have to reveal what they don't know or don't know enough about or don't know much about. And sometimes that can be really revealing. You know, in this particular case, I had questions like, you know, can you describe what an app is? And from my perspective or from your perspective, you don't hear that question very often. Usually it's, you know, what apps do you want to use, or you know, should we have an app for our library, or whatever? But it reminds you that, you know, we live in a bit of a bubble as technologists and as media aware people, and people who use these devices, you know, not only peripherally, but this is really an extension of me. You know, it without this, I feel like I'm less. And maybe that's my flaw, but I'll accept that flaw because I think this thing makes me better. And so to start to discuss why I'm so attached to this device, and I don't necessarily think that I'm one of the people that Microsoft, for example, targets in their ads, you know, where I'm always like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Like, I do use this device, but I don't use it in such a way that I feel like it distracts from my real-life conversations. I use this mostly privately, mostly in a way that extends me when I'm in my downtime, or mostly in a way that keeps me productive when I would normally, whatever, just be sitting somewhere. Keeps me informed when I'm away from my home base, when I'm not in front of this machine. And to have the opportunity to talk at that level, you know, to somebody who's uninitiated and say, there's such a potential for joy ahead of you if this is a new idea to you. You know, and for them, that's not true at all. You know, they sort of see it as something else I need to know, or something that I have a huge, long road ahead of me if I want to stay in keeping with what's going on with technology. And trying to bring those two points of view closer together so that they see the potential that I live and I understand the struggle of what it is that they're up against from an outsider standpoint, it's just a beautiful opportunity. And I really appreciate LibraryLink New Jersey and the library that I visited. I had a great day. We talked about Google apps for business. We talked about mobile platforms. We talked about Android versus iOS. We talked about media and visual media specifically, and the ways that we can use social media in order to engage a new audience differently. And it wasn't as though this library didn't have a Facebook presence. It was that there was more than they really imagined that they could do with these platforms. You know, it's not just about a tweet or a Facebook status once in a while that celebrates some major success, but rather what is going on every day, what discussions can we start, what new books showed up today, what new DVD showed up today, why were they selected? How can I get into the ILS in order to make a remote borrow and come and pick up my media?
Right.
What and other programs? Absolutely.
You know, just reminding the community of what services it provides. Yeah. You know?
And to us, and it also from the outside, or from the point of view of a traditional library standpoint, and the way that they are often seen by the uninitiated or people who haven't been in the library in the last 10 years, people still think that they are warehouses for books. And sometimes they are, but more often than that, they are, to use Leslie Berger's phrase, they're community living rooms. They're a place for people to come and gather, a place for people to engage in culture, a place for people to participate. So to use social networking in order to expand on that idea and to share that idea and to spread the idea that we're not just books is so important for libraries today. And if they are still warehouses for books, to be aware and to share those ideas with other libraries and to have conversations about how you make that transition, because the libraries that don't are in trouble. You know, mm-hmm. The libraries that don't have necessarily a reason to, they don't have a reason to continue to exist if they are still just a place to take out books. There's more to libraries, great libraries, than the media that they have on the shelf. There's resources and people. There is programming that happens. There's technology training. There is author visits. There are all kinds of things that happen in great libraries, and every library can be truly great. Regardless of budget, I truly believe this, regardless of budget, regardless of time constraints, regardless of those other constraints, because priorities have to shift. If your concern and your money and your time is going towards maintaining your Encyclopedia Britannica, you have to understand that there are many, many libraries who have gotten rid of those for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that they have replaced them with chairs that face each other so that people can come together and talk and not be shushed. Libraries are changing, and the great libraries are. And even the ones that are not so great are becoming aware, hopefully.
Well, I think a lot of that is, the Barnes & Noble. It's funny, the Barnes & Nobles and the Borders, which created this community hangout to read books and to a social center. And then those faced trouble. But now the libraries, are succeeding with that format of being like a casual place you can go and, read and just socialize and learn. So.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about was these recent topics that we've talked about many times, the Chromebook and Android specifically. I've given these presentations now again and again. I recently gave a talk at Rossmore. Might have even talked about it last week.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, about the Chromebook. And
when there was no internet.
When there was no internet, and that actually was a beautiful thing. But it seems like there's so much attraction to these devices and interest in these devices, but there's still that mystery about them, about why one would have one. In my talk about Android this week, I'm going to do that same thing, go in and ask the question, what is it that you want to come away with? But typically, what's asked about are things like, how do I install applications? How is this different than iOS? Is it really valuable for me to migrate to this solution versus another solution? Do I need to get the most expensive tablet? Do I need to get the biggest tablet? Is there a way to use a keyboard with it? And so on. What are your favorite apps? Those are delicious questions, and for somebody who is initiated and somebody who uses these devices on a regular basis, like yourself or myself, those become background things that are just known. You know the apps that you use all the time. We've talked about it, but can you remind me, do you feel like you're a power user on your iPhone? Do you have an iPad?
I do not have an iPad.
That's interesting. Why do you not have an iPad?
Yeah, I have my laptop, I have my phone, and yeah, I don't know. I don't feel a need for it yet.
Is it the justification of the cost?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I mean,
have you ever considered a Nexus 7?
I know my wife wants one, and I would get one for her, but she doesn't want one at the prices they're at now.
They're $200.
I know that's.
Okay.
My phone is actually, a sticky point for us, but I'm probably going to have to get a new one. I dropped it, and the back of it is all shattered, my iPhone.
Would you consider the 5C?
I'm not. I hate those color schemes. I hate that case. I hate that 5C. It's
a very strong word, Brian.
I'm not a fan. All right, I'm not a fan.
I've heard a lot of people talking about the iOS 7 too.
I went with hate, okay?
Yeah. I see it. It's up in the corner.
Yes. Which, it's weird. I don't know what happened, but I thought – I'm not sure what account I'm actually broadcasting on. It's on our YouTube page. That's all that matters to me.
And it's always an issue for me because, I connect with
Yes. But I'm pretty sure I did it from the same account I always do. But for some reason, my save preset of my Hangout toolbox wasn't there when we started tonight. So that's why I was doing it as you were talking earlier. But I do not have an iPad. Getting back to what we were talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, it's odd because I would think, like, as a musician, for example, the benefit that you would get from it.
It would. I mean, GarageBand is on the iPhone, so I have worked with it, but it would be easier if it was on an iPad. And I've gone into an Apple store, and I've played around with GarageBand on the iPad, and it would be nice to have, something that size to do some compositions and work out some ideas on the fly. But, I think I would need a new laptop actually before I purchased an iPad.
Well, I mean, it's funny because we are in a time where these things are powerful enough that it begins to beg the question, if you attach a Bluetooth keyboard to an iPad, what more exactly do you need for a laptop?
I like having my files. I like having them.
How do you not have your files? It's an interesting question.
I like having my files with me on a hard drive. And my laptop is my MacBook is my main computer. I don't have a desktop. I don't have a machine. I just have my MacBook. So if that goes, I would like to have the more comprehensive tools available to me on a laptop rather than the iPad and going to the cloud.
Yeah, and because you do video editing and audio editing. All right. So Chromebook is not a solution for you?
No, I mean, it would be, if money were no object, I would have all of these things.
Considering your specific reluctance to pursue the iPad as a laptop replacement, the same issue is intensified with the Chromebook. There's no space on the device. Everything is cloud-based.
Right. And even even the MacBook Air, as popular as it is, the storage, the hard drive, flash storage isn't, it's basically what I have now. And what I have now is, it seems every time I buy a MacBook, I get screwed. It's like, as soon as I buy it, they introduce a new model. I seem to need a new MacBook every time they're about to introduce a new model. And I'm not paying attention and don't realize that that's what's happening. Like, I don't pay attention to the signs that, the inventory is depleting, or it's been taken offline. For some reason or another, I'm not paying attention. I buy the MacBook, and then like a week or two later, a new one comes out with like twice the storage. It's happened like twice the last two times I purchased the MacBook. So,
well, it's funny that you say that. I mean, I specifically wait for those times because of the drop in price.
Right. Both times it was like emergency situation. The MacBook was about to die or was dead. So.
But it's interesting. I have two MacBooks. One died like 2.5 years ago, and I held on to it because I figured I'd get a replacement battery and be back in business. And my other MacBook that I was running Linux on just recently died. Either the display or the hard drive, I think it's the display, is dead. And I haven't gone out of my way to replace it or to repair it because I have desktops. But for the most part, like if I need a portable solution, the Chromebook is everything I need. It's not like I'm going to be going to a cafe somewhere and doing design work. I might be going to a cafe in order to record notes from a meeting, but I could even do that on my tablet. I could do it on my phone.
Right. And I do that on my phone, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there's a paradigm shift, obviously. But I don't have the same feeling that you do. As a matter of fact, I'm a little bit reluctant because I had files on my MacBook Pro that were not backed up anywhere, that if I had just been using cloud storage, they would have been automatically backed up.
And well, I do back up, so that's...
You would have to. would have to.
Yeah. Of course, I've had bad luck with hard drive, external hard drives lately. Hopefully this one, the one I'm using as a backup, I'm going to have to, it's relatively new, but probably within a year I'll have to get another one to be the backup for the backup.
Do you happen to know how much a solid state hard drive, 1 terabyte, costs right now?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, I just had a terabyte drive die. An external.
Yeah.
And, like, I was using it just for backup, luckily, but now I'm, like, frightened that I'm going to lose all my stuff. Like, this should not be here. This should be here and somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, redundancy. It's always a good thing.
Right. Carbonite. Back it up right.
Yep.
Anyway, how about you, Brian?
Well, we talked about... Netflix a few episodes ago.
I'm sorry, what is it?
Netflix.
Wait, how do you say it?
Netflix.
Is it like F-L-I-C-K-X?
F-L-I-X.
What is it?
What is your problem? Netflix.
Netflix.
That was your intentional vine cut moment.
That was my 6 minute or 6 second. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Clickety click.
Actually, maybe that was my 6 second right there, my reaction to your understanding that it was a joke. Or maybe it was this, my reaction to the reaction, but anyway.
Well, we've gone now beyond 6 seconds, so.
Well, but you're a great editor, so,
Yeah, well, I'm not getting all that in.
No.
Anyway, we talked about Netflix a few episodes ago, and, the Kevin Spacey... comments about House of Cards and we're talking about paradigm shift, the paradigm shift with television and online viewing and giving the viewers what they want. And there was a Radio Times article, about Vince Gilligan in his remarks to the media after winning the Emmy Award last night about how Netflix, he said, here's the quote, speaking to reporters after the show was named Outstanding Drama at last night's Emmy Awards, Gilligan observed, television, and it's a quote, television has changed a lot in 6 years. I'm no expert on the sociological elements of it, but I've got to think a big part of what has changed is streaming video on demand, particularly with operations like Netflix, iTunes, and Amazon Prime. And then he later said, I think Netflix kept us on the air. Not only are we standing up here with the Emmy, I don't think our show would have even lasted beyond season two. It's a new era in television, and we've been very fortunate to reap the benefits. So, you know, again, here's another, you know, industry person crediting Netflix with, you know, a show's survival, you know, a la Kevin Spacey and House of Cards, which was a Netflix exclusive. But here you have something on a terrestrial, well, not terrestrial, but on a cable broadcaster, which basically is terrestrial these days. I mean, so ubiquitous. But, you know, praising online streaming and praising Netflix in particular for the show's survival. So, and I know you're a fan of Breaking Bad. So
I'm a fan of Breaking Bad, and I'm a huge fan of Netflix. As a matter of fact, I wondered if you got a chance to view the Netflix original, I guess it's not original, but it's a Netflix exclusive, Derek.
Yeah, I will, because I've been, obviously, as a UK TV viewer, I've known about it for a while. I mean, I've been seeing clips from it for ages.
I have to say, I mean, it was unexpectedly poignant. It really was. Like I cried several times watching the show, and at the end, there's this event that I won't reveal. That is just, it's heartbreaking and it's fantastic. It's just like, you know, there were moments like that in The Office, but there have been other things that he's written and directed. We're talking about, what's his name?
Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais, that have been mostly about comedy, have not really touched on the poignant part of his persona as an actor. And he really nailed it. I mean, he really, it's still funny. And it's still got cringeworthy moments, not quite like The Office. What this is really about, though, is it's celebratory of a character. It really, it's a cast, but it really focuses on this character and his interactions. And it shows a bit of range for Ricky Gervais. I think that we are just starting to see his long arc, which is surprising because he's had amazing success and has had many things that he's done that could have stolen that success, that could have destroyed him. Didn't he host the Emmys? Was it the Emmys?
The Golden Globes?
Golden Globes. Yeah, and if you watch that, it's a little bit painful to watch. He really destroys the audience. It really destroys.
Yeah. And I loved it.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. But it could have been misinterpreted, and it could have made it more difficult for him to accomplish other things. But instead, it seems like he is catapulted. You know, and think about these names that are showing up on Netflix. You know, like Kevin Spacey, like Ricky Gervais, like who's going to show up next? You know, is Nicolas Cage going to show up on Netflix with a starring role? Is, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of names that come to mind about people who could use this platform in order to really capitalize on a dedicated audience that would sit there and watch 6, 8, 10 shows in a row, you know, and all these shows on AMC that started and built an audience and then left because they didn't build a big enough audience, those things should continue, much in the way that Damages did. You know, I was so happy to be able to watch the third season of Damages, not only because I was a cable cutter and it had left I had no access to it, but then it showed up on Amazon Prime, which I also have. And I loved that show. I really, really did. And I completely forgot about it, and it just popped up one day. And I was able to finish out that season and really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great ending to the series. But I would have missed it if I had to rely on terrestrial television in order for that, you know, or whatever we call it, old media, in order to participate in that watch.
So that was basically all I want to talk about on that, you know, because I know we talked about it a little bit with House of Cards and Kevin Spacey. So I just wanted to – I saw that today and kind of figured it was a little bit of a follow-up to that. The next thing I want to talk about just quickly is, and I guess we talked about it before, even though it kind of, actually in our first Technology in the Arts podcast, when in the early stages, when CNET's James Kim tragically died.
He was fantastic.
Right.
So sad.
Right, it was. And at the time, the thought was, you know, he may have been relying on online mapping services, but as it turned out, that wasn't the case. They were using traditional paper maps. But
it's interesting that you're bringing this up as an analogy to your story.
Well, it is, because it was something we talked about in the first Technology in the Arts, and it brought that to mind. But you know, remember we talked about my my trip? I was supposed to. For professional reasons, I was supposed to catch up to a tour of Superfund, EPA Superfund sites up in North Jersey that took place last week.
And it's like top secret. Like, what are you talking about that here for?
It's not top secret.
There's going to be people like breaking in your door in any second.
It was a press release on it. It wasn't top secret. What was top secret was the fact that I got lost in the middle of the U.S. Army's Picatinny Arsenal, where there were a bunch of gated installations where apparently one building was housing a railgun testing facility. And I was driving around in this, and that was what I didn't mention last week, was that this was all going on while the shootout was happening at the naval complex in Washington.
Are you revealing
out
that it was you who?
No, but that's why I was freaking out at the time, because I'm by all these U.S. Army buildings. I know
you
that
thought
this
you were going to like. You thought you were going to fall into a wormhole
I thought,
and
like
show
a,
up.
I thought a military jeep or something, some kind of vehicle, was going to like charge at me, and like I was getting it blocked in. I thought I was going to get arrested, whatever. I mean, was going through my head. Remember, we discussed that I'm paranoid. We discussed that I'm paranoid last week.
I think that you should be paranoid, and I think that you should stop talking about this topic right now.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Here's what was interesting about it. Here's what was interesting about it. So I, as you know, even though I'm an Apple iPhone user, I use a MacBook. You know, we use the Google Plus Hangouts. I'm also a Google person too, and you know I love Google Maps. You know, I was totally against Apple Maps, you know, when they messed that up, and I totally rely on Google Maps. I don't trust any other online mapping service. And this time, Google Maps is the reason why I couldn't find the place I was supposed to go to, because I was trying to do some additional research on what I was supposed to be looking at on this tour, and found a link to the building that's at this location now. They had a link to the MapQuest version. They had a link to where it is via MapQuest, and I'm looking at the map and I'm like, that's not where Google told me it was. And I went to Apple Maps, which, you know, when I was lost, I went to Apple, I clicked on the address and it took me to Apple Maps. I'm like, no, I gotta get that Google Maps. Who knows where Apple Maps is gonna take me? Well, as it turns out, Apple Maps had it right as well. Google Maps was the only one that had it wrong.
Did you ever consider Waze?
No, I, you know,
Why not?
Because I only have a few apps on my phone.
You should install Waze.
Okay. Well, anyway, Google Maps.
No. I have to stand by this point. You have to install Waze.
Okay, I will.
I want you to promise me that you're going to try it.
I will. I will show it to you on next week's episode.
All right. Okay. I want you to get some points. I want some competition in there.
Oh, boy.
There's a gamification aspect that you need to pay attention to.
So, anyway, Google Maps has it 2 miles, nearly 2 miles south on the same road that where it is. And what's funny is that when you put the location where it is in Google Maps, it says, oh, the approximate location is 45 somewhat, but the address was like 180. And what's strange is that they have street view of the building. And you can clearly see that the address is 180. So, you know, even their own data is conflicting against each other, conflicts with each other there. So, you know, it's just a cautionary tale about, you know, over-reliance on Google Maps. You know, it's always good to take two or three different options, I guess. And I should have known to do that, because where Google Maps was telling me this place was, you could see there was nothing there. I thought it might have been in the buildings across the street, but that turned out to be the Arsenal and the U.S. Army buildings. So, you know, I should have looked at Street View. I should have, you know, but I trusted Google Maps, and that was a mistake. So just a cautionary tale about over-reliance on Google Maps.
And the moral of the story is install Waze, W-A-Z-E.
I know what it is. Okay. So finally, the only last thing I wanted to talk about was New Jersey Internet Radio. And there's a couple reasons why, and I'll get into that momentarily. But you know, Christian and I, my friend Christian Beach and I, we started out in a band. A mutual friend introduced us to each other. We were all three of us were in a band together. We didn't really do anything. We just rehearsed and, you know, wrote a few things. And then the mutual friend left. And Christian and I, for I think one or two more rehearsals, tried to, you know, work on our own, but then we drifted apart, and then we got back together and we started doing new age music. Actually, we were doing like this instrumental new age stuff that you would hear on like the weather channel at the time. And his Christian's father knew this rapper who he was a bouncer at the Green Parrot Rock Club in Neptune, New Jersey, which is no longer there, but it was a very popular place. And we actually played a few shows there. We hooked up with the rapper, which was odd. We had all these synthesizers and electronic equipment. We were, you know, we were listening to New Age, but we loved Depeche Mode. We were into Ministry and Front 242, Nicer Ebb, you know, a lot of the cyberpunk, Nine Inch Nails, obviously. And we were just getting into that, and then this rapper came into our lives, and we tried to do like this Run DMC meets Depeche Mode type thing, is what I usually describe it as. But we played at the Green Parrot a few times. It was a very popular place. I saw Nine Inch Nails play there on his first like national tour, when Pretty Hate Machine first came out. I saw The Call there. Actually, we helped set up for The Call because their roadies bailed, or the people that they hired, the local people, bailed, and they asked us to, you know, help out because they knew we were around, and we helped set up for them. And there was somebody else I saw there. I can't remember, but anyway, popular place. And it coincided with, this radio station at the time, WHTG 106.3 FM, which billed itself as Modern Rock of the Jersey Shore. And it was probably the radio station.
Can you do the call out for WHTG?
Like Modern Rock at the Jersey Shore. That's what they used to say.
WHTG.
Now, they didn't really use the HT. It was on their stickers, their bumper stickers, but it's like.
because you can't even like turn that into like a freight. I mean, Wittig, you know.
Yeah, it was the initials of the owners, I think.
Wittig.
So so anyway, it was a great station. You know, playing you know alternative music. You know, in the 90s, you know, that's where I first heard Ben Folds Five. But before that, you know, they played XTC. They would play Ministry. They would play Nine Inch Nails.
That's quite a sprawl. XTC, Ministry, Nine Inch Nails.
They played everything. Depeche Mode. They played so much great music. And then they also, you know, played local music. You know, And Matt Pinfield, who went on to MTV fame, he started there. He was like one of the original DJs, and I think he was the programming director, program manager, or whatever. And you know, we crossed paths a couple times, including this infamous party that we played at, which was we weren't even supposed to play. It was total misunderstanding and whatever. But yeah, it was – so this station was great. It even won Rolling Stone magazine does its annual readers poll. And in 1993 and 94, it earned favorite radio station honors for media markets. And I even remember seeing it, you know, myself. I know Wikipedia says it's 93 and 94. I remember seeing it in print one of those years. So I know it won at least one of those years, but the station, you know, like many great radio stations, you know, became extinct. It changed formats. It kind of stayed alternative. I think it was like your rock alternative. It was like G1063. There was like a little bit of its past legacy involved, but then eventually it went to some other format altogether, and you know, it was gone. Somebody who was there towards the end is keeping it alive, at least the spirit of the station alive, in an online radio station called Alt Rock, which is ALTROK. And, that's at altrock.com. And there's actually an HD2, an FM HD2 feed through WBJB, which is the Brookdale Community College radio station.
Which I speak at pretty frequently.
Right, at Brookdale, yes. And some of the former 106.3 people are there, including the person. It's Sean something. I can't remember his last name. It's Carolin or something like that. But, yeah, so alt rock is basically keeping, you know, that spirit of modern rock at the Jersey Shore alive. So it's every now and then I'll, you know, if I'm missing 106.3, I will, give it a listen. And it's, you can see the playlist and everything. And it's really, you know, a lot like what 106.3 used to do. The next two I want to talk about are somewhat related. But they are predominantly feature local New Jersey artists. The first is Blow Up Radio, and I'm not sure what his last name is. I know the guy who runs it is named Laszlo, and he actually has a show called Laszlo's Den,
did he do something on YSP?
What was that?
Wasn't he on YSP for a while?
No. But Laszlo's Den is actually also re-aired on the Penguin Rocks, which is another radio station, which I was about to talk about. But let me talk about Blow Up Radio first, because not only does he play New Jersey artists, but he gets out. He has a monthly concert series at it's usually at Buddy's Tavern in Parlin, New Jersey, kind of like north, central New Jersey, kind of going up north, but it's still considered central New Jersey, I guess. But, so he has a live component. And just wanted to mention this. Every year, because his wife suffers from this disease, he has a benefit, what he calls a webathon, for the Spondylitis Association of America. And spondylitis is basically a kind of arthritis, a chronic arthritis. It's something that affects the joints, kind of where the hip and the meets the spinal cord. It's like a chronic pain. And Christian's actually, he does it usually every year, and he's doing it again. He's participating. And they're actually doing it like a virtual festival this year. They have over 50 bands performing throughout the weekend, and it's going to be October 18th through the 20th. And it's going to be on blowupradio.com, thepenguinrocks.com, and 40footholestudio.com. So there's going to be – each radio station is going to kind of be like a stage at a festival. And so they're going to have a recording session. It's not going to be live sets, but they're going to be recorded live and then, you know, pieced together through for this webathon. So they do it every year, and I'll probably post something about it. I think I did last year, but it's kind of a cool thing. So there's some community aspects, and he puts out a newsletter, and it's an interesting station. And then the penguinrocks.com is actually run by Gary Ween, who I talked to on my Tandem with the Random podcast last year, I believe. Oh, yeah, he wrote a book called Are You Listening? And it was that he ranked the top 100.
Do you want to mention what his name is famous for?
Hmm?
Is he not a part of the band Ween?
No.
Really?
No. No, because his name is W-I-E-N.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
And Ween, they're not – that's not their names either. They're stage names.
But, but I'm saying there's somebody in Ween who uses the last name Ween.
They both use – it's like Gene Ween and something.
Gene Ween, yeah.
Yeah, but they're not – that's not their names.
No, I'm just saying. I thought that this was the guy. I thought you were going to lead him.
No. Gary Ween, he's actually written a few books. Actually, one of his books is called Beyond the Palace, which talks about the venues beyond Asbury Park, that, you know, popular music venues outside of Asbury Park, and the Green Parrot is actually featured prominently in that book. And actually, John Pfeiffer, another Tandem with a Random guest, and also Christian's manager, he's mentioned it because he was in a few bands, a couple of bands that played there regularly. Well of Souls and In Between Dreams, I believe, were the two bands he was in. So anyway, so Gary Ween has written Beyond the Palace. And that's actually the name of a show he does of local music on the penguinrocks.com, which actually today, because it was Bruce Springsteen's birthday, they did like a big block of Bruce Springsteen songs plus covers by artists who he had asked for submissions, you know, Bruce Springsteen covers to celebrate Bruce Springsteen's birthday. So I think that was what brought it to mind today about talking about these radio stations, that concentrate on local music. I'm somewhat connected to the New Jersey music scene, and you know, I just wanted to plug these internet radio stations that also support the local music scene. So I just wanted to bring them to mind and bring those to our audience's attention, and you know, just let everybody know there's wherever you are, there's probably an internet radio station that's spotlighting local music,
and we'll share all those in the show notes.
Yeah, and you know, just just check them out and find out about those those local musicians near you. So I will put links to all those radio stations, altrock.com, blowuprradio, and thepenguinrocks.com. and also a link about the Spondylitis Association of America webathon featuring Christian Beach.
And Brian Kelly.
No, I'm not on it.
You might be.
No, it'll just be Christian, possibly his father, Gorgo, joining him on mandolin.
Nice.
That's how it usually gets done.
Sweet. Yeah, Christian's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, we can work that out and, you know, he can perform live for us. You know, he had the only live musical performance in Technology and the Arts history, so he could have the only two live performances in Technology and the Arts history.
Sweet.
Yes. So, anything else, John?
Nope, I'm all done.
Okay. So, that concludes this episode of Technology and the Arts. Thank you for watching or listening. And remember to visit us at technologyandthearts.com. Visit our Facebook page, our Google Plus page. Follow us on Twitter at tech_arts. You can watch our videos on YouTube and search for us via your favorite podcatcher. We hope you'll join us again next week when we return for Technology and the Arts. This is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemesney. Take care.
Thoughts and views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at technologyandthearts.com.